From the KTO Newsroom, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins with this news update. The Regulatory Commission of Alaska, which is overseeing Hilcorp's purchase of BP's stake in the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, plans to hold a six-hour public hearing on the deal next month. The decision denies a request by the companies to approve the transaction without a public hearing. The commission announced its decision on Friday, saying it had received public comments both supporting the deal and registering concerns. The hearing is scheduled for early next month in downtown Anchorage. It will allow additional comment on the applications, RCA said in a one-page order signed by Chairman Robert Pickett. BP and Hilcorp, in a written filing last month, asked the RCA to approve the deal without holding a public hearing. The company cited concerns about delays and said that the agency had not held hearings while scrutinizing other major transactions. And statewide, Alaska is experiencing the most significant cold snap since 2012. Winters used to feel like this every 2 or 3 years. Now this deep cold only comes along every 8 or 10. And even though Juneau's definition of frigid isn't the same as Fairbanks or Kotzebue's, one thing that unites many Alaskans on a crisp winter day, the burning desire to go outside. Here are some tips and ways people are staying warm. At Discovery Preschool in Juneau, winter days, though short on sunlight, can feel a little longer. Today, Blue Scheibler is overseeing indoor recess. In one area, toddlers climb over plush blocks. In another, they dash down the hall.
I wonder how many balls you could move from that bin to the basket.
Scheibler says these kids are tough enough to withstand most of the weather Southeast Alaska has to offer.
Rain would never stop us. Rain, we can handle any amount of rain. Let me help this child really quick. Mimi!
But the toddlers aren't a fan of wind gusts of up to 100 miles an hour and 15-degree temperatures.
The second they get out there, their noses are cold. Even if every other part of their body is covered, their face, their cheeks, and their nose, they get cold, and they just start crying. Like, they don't really understand it because they're used to going outside every day.
Young children and seniors can have a tough time regulating body heat. But depending on your tolerance to cold, you might also feel like crying. But state epidemiologist Michelle Rodoff says adults should be just fine going outside in any weather. With the right preparations, you can be safe, even in the wind and sub-zero temperatures.
I think our bodies in general have a pretty incredible capacity to adapt.
Rodoff says there are two things to consider before going out: frostbite and hypothermia. Frostbite typically occurs at temperatures of minus 18 degrees.
The colder it gets below that, the more quickly it can happen.
But Rodoff says your body is constantly sending you signals, especially when something's not right. Flushed cheeks could be an early warning. And if the skin appears patchy white or yellow, it's time to take a break and warm up indoors. Constant shivering is another message that says you're possibly headed for hypothermia.
That's kind of its last-ditch effort to generate some more heat.
But Rodoff says a good way to prevent that is to layer up in clothing made of synthetic fiber or wool and cover your most valuable body parts, faces, fingers, and toes. She doesn't think there's a temperature that's too cold for going out. In fact, there's some upswings, like mental health benefits and boosting metabolism. But depending on the cultural norms, she says your friends might think you're insane. She cheerfully walks her dog in Anchorage when it's 7 degrees outside.
Our faces were all frosty and her eyelashes were frozen and all this kind of stuff. So I sent a picture out to my friends, and my friend in LA said, gosh, it was below 60 today, so I didn't go for a run because it was too cold.
Rodoff says as far as what's comfortable, that's still a subjective experience. But what about the Mendenhall ice caves?
Yeah, let's check right here. Curious.
The Mendenhall Lake is not safe. As a rule, ice is never safe, but even after the latest cold snap, the Mendenhall Lake is dangerously thin in places. Members of a community group went out on Thursday to check the lake. They're expecting residents over the weekend to cross the ice in search of the Mendenhall Glacier ice caves. So far, there are no confirmed reports of any ice caves. The group traced the usual path across the lake using ice screws and ice axes to determine the thickness every 100 feet.
So it shows you that close to shore, it can be thick or thin.
Yeah.
And then as we get further out, so far, it's kind of a mix.
That's Brian Weed of Juno's Hidden History. His group put out a call for members to come out and check the ice thickness. The group only got 500 feet from the shoreline near the visitor center when the ice thinned to just an inch and a half. Anything less than 4 inches is considered dangerous. Capital City Fire and Rescue Chief Rich Etheridge says the city doesn't measure the ice and would never say the lake is safe.
You know, our advice is, you know, stay off the ice, but we know people are going to go out there anyway. They're taking a calculated risk and rolling the dice being on the lake.
Etheridge says all it takes is for the glacier to calve. That could fracture the ice and put a lot of people in the water. And Sitka's nearly 50-year-old city seal is showing its age. Depicting a Russian cannon aimed over Sitka Sound, it's something that looks like a Tlingit fort. The seal evolves a painful past for many in the community. As KCAW's Catherine Rose reports, the Sitka Assembly is getting behind a proposal to redesign it.
Assemblymember Kevin Knox said the seal represents historic and generational trauma for Sitka's Tlingit community. Sitka Tribe of Alaska Tribal Council and the Assembly discussed changing the seal when the two groups met for a government-to-government meeting last fall.
The dialogue in the community around historic trauma and reconciliation is not something that's new to a lot of us. There's a growing depth to that conversation, and the seal in some capacity represents some of that trauma. I don't know if, you know, if you take a close look at it, the representation of the cannon pointed towards the old historic fort represents some of that trauma.
Knox sponsored the discussion item along with member Stephen Eisenbeiss. The two proposed starting the public process to create a new seal, budgeting $1,000 to the winner of a design contest. City staff will take the finalists around to all of the city committees and commissions and host a public forum on the redesign. Then all of the information from the roadshow would go back to the Assembly for final selection and approval of a new city seal. Eisenbeiss said it took a long time for him to finally notice the full picture illustrated on the seal, but when he took a closer look, he realized that a change was in order.
Yes, the seal has served us for many, many years, but I think in this instance we have an opportunity to do better and that we can do better.
Assembly members Tor Christensen and Kevin Mosier agreed. Member Richard Ween said he was in support of a seal redesign, but had some questions about the process and the cost to switch over things like letterheads and decals on city vehicles. He wondered if some things could be grandfathered in to save some money in the process. Member Valerie Nelson said she wasn't willing to approve a redesign until she could see all of the costs outlined, and she said some Sitkins were concerned that redesigning the seal was, quote, rewriting history.
Well, I don't think we're trying to rewrite history. We're trying to make some people feel better about the trauma. But when I look at the seal, I don't see it as pointing towards a fort. The way, and when I go up on Castle Hill, I see the cannon pointing out as if it's protecting all of us. But, you know, I wasn't there when the fort was blasted, and my relatives weren't involved. I'm an immigrant.
Sitka Tribe of Alaska Chair Kathy Hope Erickson attended the meeting. Speaking to KCAW as an individual, she remembered when a seal redesign was first brought forward by current Mayor Gary Paxton when he was Sitka's city administrator and she was the city clerk. That was 20 years ago. She says she was glad the issue was returning to the assembly table and that assembly members should do whatever it takes to keep up the momentum.
I think there are some items that rise above what the cost is going to be, and this is certainly one of them. We have enough people that have thought deeply about this and agree that it is something that does not represent Sitka.
Although there was consensus on the idea, no vote was taken on the plan this time around. Members Eisenbeiss and Knox will gather more information for the assembly, and at a future meeting, the group will officially decide on how to move forward with the seal redesign contest. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
And in other news, an Alaska dentist who gained notoriety after he was seen in a video riding a hoverboard and pulling teeth was convicted of defrauding the Alaska Medicaid program. Seth Lockhart was convicted Friday of 46 counts of felony medical assistance fraud and scheming to defraud, plus misdemeanor counts of illegally practicing dentistry and reckless endangerment. The conviction followed a five-week bench trial before Anchorage Superior Court Judge Michael Wolverton, who wrote the state's evidence was overwhelming. The felony charge carried a possible sentence of up to 10 years in prison. And taking a quick look at the weather for the rest of tonight, mostly clear and lows around 10. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy, and it's warming up to highs around 20. You're listening to KTOO.